everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics and manga, and sometimes comics and manga-related properties. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mick and Rob.
Hello.
Hello.
I said as always again, even though there's been many times when specifically Mick hasn't been on the show.
That's right.
How is everyone?
Surviving.
Yes, it's been a long, cold Valentine's Day. And what better way to spend that than talking about one of our collective significant others, by which I mean The Punisher. So, people listening have probably picked up that we've been sort of leading up to this a bit, and that's because series one of The Punisher, which was on Netflix, I think is probably collectively our favourite Marvel show.
I'd say that's...
Hold on. Collectively, that means all of us.
Yeah.
It's not my favourite.
Yeah, but on balance, if you kind of pool all of our favouritism into one, I think The Punisher just edges all of the others out.
Iron Fist loses again.
It's not
one
his
day it will
fault.
Be the Inhumans' time to shine.
It's not Iron Fist's fault. It's because they didn't hire an actual martial artist.
Or indeed, an actor.
Anyway, here we are at the point that I think we've all been waiting for quite a while. We're going to review The Punisher Season 2.
Yes.
And guys.
Yeah.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it maybe a bit crap?
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah. Do you remember what you told me before about Agent Carter Season 2?
I mean... Agent Carter Season 2 was at least enjoyable.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of worse than that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, I enjoyed Agent Carter Season 2. In fact, I'll be honest, even Inhumans had a certain laughable appeal.
Yeah, it had a charm to it.
It had that car crash sort of... addiction.
Inhumans
is an innocent puppy that just keeps making a mess all over the carpet.
Inhumans is kind of, you know, that 1980s B movie that during the 80s we all thought was just god awful, but 20 years later we kind of love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that, is it?
No. I'll be honest, for me, and I, as you know, guys, I do try and prioritize my viewing so that I'm up to date on all my comic book goodness.
This is true. Mick is almost OCD with how he does this stuff. He's got everything organized in like a weekly planner.
Yep, that's right.
You've watched both series of Iron Fist, haven't you?
Yeah.
I love the shameful admission there.
It cost me my friends, my social circus. My wife left me.
Oh, God. Iron Fist made him into a country and western singer.
The dog left me.
His pickup doesn't work anymore.
The baby crawled out to get run over by a car just so it didn't have to sit through the rest of season two of Iron Fist. I did watch Iron Fist. I grew up in a town where comic book based TV was rare.
Yeah.
And therefore a precious thing. We had reruns of the 1966 Batman, reruns of the Green Hornet, an animated Batman series that seemed to revolve around the inclusion of Batmite.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then there was nothing for a few years. And then we got Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, which it was amazing that we actually got Wonder Woman. I mean, Incredible Hulk, okay, fine. But Wonder Woman was the one that really shocked everybody. Because surely they would have done a Superman series or something like that.
Yeah, but, you know, we had to wait ages for a Superman series after that. And then it was Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
And then there was another huge gap until we got Smallville. And they all seemed to focus on the big... Oh, there was the Nicholas Hammond live-action Spider-Man that lasted for about 10 minutes.
I remember that one. We don't talk about that one, Mick.
No.
Anyway, I think the salient point is this. Given that, Mick, you are almost literally a man dying of thirst, shoving his head into an oasis.
Yes.
How many episodes of The Punisher Season 2 did you get through?
Two and a half. And I've watched that first half of that third episode 4 times now because I can't remember which point I nodded off at.
Yeah, I'm not much better than Mick. I've managed 6, and I've really been struggling with it. It's just not holding my attention at all.
It's because, actually, I might have got a bit further. I can't remember, because they keep jumping around with the plot around the girl.
Yeah.
In the bar. Yeah. And I really want to care what her deal is, because that would be important to being invested in the series, but I really just don't, because she's such an irritating cow.
Exactly.
You know, they've done nothing to make her sympathetic in any way, shape or form to the audience.
Knowing the Punisher, as we do from the comics, and the first Punisher comic I ever read was back in the 80s, and it was when they started releasing them in newsagents. I think it was the Circle of Blood story. That storyline was the first Punisher storyline that I ever read. It was when Frank Castle was put into prison, and then he escaped. He ended up working for some faith healer type guy before he killed everybody, as Frank does. And there is no way that I can see that Frank Castle, or even the Frank Castle from the modern Punisher comics, tolerating somebody that irritating.
This is the thing.
I mean, to be fair, episode 2 doesn't literally just shove a load of tape over her mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe she just kept that up for like the whole series.
Yes.
But this is the point, you know, that the whole point with Frank Castle, when you get down to it, we know that at the core of him there is a good man.
Yeah.
Who wants to do the right thing and get the scum off the streets and all the rest of it.
He's just a good man who had a really bad day.
But he's not a Boy Scout. Yes, regardless of how irritating they are, someone like Superman or Captain America is going to defend that woman to the hilt, even if she's like, I don't know, flinging her own feces in his face repeatedly.
Yeah, even Batman would have a degree of tolerance.
Yeah, but the Punisher, no. It'd be, right, I'm trying to help you. You're not responding. Screw you. I'm just going to go find some other bad guys to kill instead.
Yeah.
See, the funny thing is, you're saying this, and then at pretty much the point which both of you stopped watching.
That's exactly what happens.
Although he basically just leaves him like a trailer and says, right, you just stay here for like half the series while I go fight Jigsaw for a bit.
Oh.
Because that's the great thing about Punisher Season 2. There's 2 completely separate plot lines.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I'm like, I don't understand.
Hold on. Do you mean Jigsaw or do you mean slightly cut man?
Yeah, so I mean Jigsaw. Well, no, it's Billy Russo with a few scars on his face.
Minor abrasion man.
If anything, just make him a bit more ruggedly handsome.
Yes. Do you remember Jonah Hex?
Yep.
He's more of a Jigsaw character than Jigsaw.
No, but guys, don't you get it? Because the Jigsaw is his mind now.
Oh, please.
Because that's the other great bit, is that Billy Russo, main villain of Season 1, has amnesia now. He doesn't remember the entire plot of Season 1.
The whole thing with amnesia really annoys me, because it's just lazy writing.
Especially when it's specifically, I remember everything, except conveniently all the really bad things I've done.
Yeah. I remember very little, except very clearly one man's face.
Yeah. And then they try and explain it with, oh, there's trauma and this and that. And they'll basically explain it in a way that no psychologist or no psychotherapist would ever believe in. In fact, no neurosurgeon or neurologist or whatever would ever justify. No, I think
Dr. Dumont in this, she would believe it, because she's a very bad psychologist.
She is. She's just all around bad at everything. Do you know who she is? You remember when we did the weird and wacky stories of the Punisher?
Yes.
She's that plastic surgeon.
Oh, God.
She basically is. Oh, because also, by the way, her and Jigsaw, yeah, they end up hooking up.
Oh, there you go, you see.
For reasons. Because she can save him or something, or maybe wants to also do crimes with him.
Isn't that like, Harley and Joker?
Yeah. Oh, hold on. That's Joker, who has a broken mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, what if Joker was just a bit whiny all the time?
And had a few scars on his face? Oh, wait, he did. In the Dark Knight. Do you want to know how I got these scars?
I mean, I feel like trying to compare Jigsaw to the Joker is doing a massive disservice to the Joker.
Yes, it is.
He's not even like a third-rate the Joker.
No.
Does he do any magic tricks with pencils or anything like that later on in the series?
No, he just kind of forgets he's a bad guy, but then decides he's a bad guy anyway and robs some banks and then gets a bit bored of that and then gets shot. By the way, everyone, we're doing spoilers.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you know, it's been out for a month now. If you haven't been disappointed by it by now, you're not really a fan, are you?
If for some reason you have been like eagerly awaiting our review and have refused to watch it until then, we're doing you a service by saving you the effort.
This, listeners, is our cast iron guarantee. We watch these things so you don't have to. That's why we brought you Inhumans Watch.
I miss Inhumans Watch.
So do I, but we need them to make a season two in order to bring it back.
They won't. We're still hoping for that standalone Lockjaw series, though.
Hey, do you know that 60% of the Punisher season two is just a member of the main cast sits around in a hotel/trailer room?
See, that's another thing that annoyed me. Just the amount of nothing. The amount of nothing going on.
I know, there's like two whole episodes where it's just the Punisher hanging out at Madani's apartment. By the way, everyone, Madani's back.
And isn't she a bit creepy?
Yeah.
Yeah, she like watches Billy Russo sleep every night and then is angry about it.
Yeah. Because I mean, if she's so angry about him sleeping, why don't she just wake him up? Oh, that's right, because he's in a coma, which magically he wakes up from just at the right point to tie up with the plot.
I mean, you say, again, tie up with the plot. That sounds like there's some kind of cohesion between stories.
If I remember rightly, and I was struggling to care. But there was a key thing that happened with Frank that then went to one of those, the director thinks they're also clever, but actually it's a really really obvious thing to do. Cut to him opening his eyes.
I mean, you can just say what it is. Like I said, we're doing spoilers.
Yeah, we are doing spoilers.
Yeah, but this is the point. It was so dull, I can't actually remember what it was. It's on the edge of my mind.
Oh, no, you've called my bluff, because I was hoping you'd explain it more, because I don't remember what you're talking about.
It was... I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like there's a shot of Frank in the car with the girl you don't care about, explaining something like, and if you think that's the way the world works, you need to wake up.
Oh, and then we cut that. To the
hospital.
Yeah.
It's something that crass.
Yeah, I think I know the scene that you're on about. Oh, it was. Yeah.
Because that's the point that Billy wakes up, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's that kind of, you know, the director smugly patting themselves on the back going, this has got Emmy written all over it.
How can it have an Emmy when it's such lazy writing?
Yeah, but they don't think like that.
Ah, bossy. I think you're lucky neither of you made it to episode 9. Basically, it's like Frank's on the rooftop and he's about to attack Jigsaw's base, but then it like flashes forward to it not going well, or maybe it flashes back and maybe forward to a different bit, and it's literally the entire episode where 90% of it I didn't know what was going on or like when events were supposed to be happening.
Now the thing is, the three of us, we sit here week in week out talking about comics and manga, so it's not like we're unaccustomed to or even averse to the non-linear storytelling method. So
yeah,
you shouldn't be sitting through a non-linear episode of The Punisher going, huh?
Yeah, and I think the problem is that they made it so it's like he's on the rooftop at different points in time, but like there's no indication of, is this the rooftop at point A or point B?
Yeah, none of those little visual clues like a clock in the background or a...
Yeah, and it's like, I think it feels like it's supposed to be happening over the course of days.
Yeah.
But that's intercut with Madani going to talk to the therapist woman. And that's like just happening over the course of a few hours. So I've got no idea what the time frame is supposed to be.
I just want to point something out. This is how lazy the writers have been with this series. The episode that I stopped at, I've just been trying to remember the name. It was Nakazat or something like that. Nakaz. I remember Nakaz. That's what I remember Nakaz from
Yard.
It was Nakaz something, but I remember after I watched that episode, I went to look up what that word actually meant, and apparently it's the Russian word for punish. Why, in a series called The Punisher, would you have an episode called Punish? Put it in Russian, then it sounds foreign.
Because he fights a bunch of Russians, there you go. That's easy. Why is Jigsaw's face so bad? That's the main thing I keep circling back around to. Especially because there's points where, like, he rips off his weird therapy mask thing and goes, look at what he did to me! You've got a little scratch on, like, the side of your face.
I mean, to be fair, if you think of all the people that were on the receiving end of Frank Castle's ministrations in Season 1, they'd be laughing at him.
By about Episode 8 or 9, Frank himself looks worse than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, doesn't help that, like, Billy's got one really big scar on, like, one of his cheeks that I'm pretty sure someone just drew on with a felt tip pen.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have just had bandages on.
The other thing that was a problem for me, and I think this sort of like sums up just how disappointingly terrible Season 2 is, I spent most of the time thinking, oh, when are we going to have Karen turn up to link it to the rest of the universe?
God, being excited for the Karen Page cameo, that's
I know. This is a series entitled The Punisher. Why am I looking forward to a guest appearance by someone who isn't even a heroine?
Also, to answer your question, it's like episode 10 she shows
up. Wow.
And like, literally, it's just Punisher ends up in hospital, Karen shows up to go, oh God, you're in the hospital, Frank, it's all bad. You've maybe killed someone, but I don't think you have. And then it's like, oh, he hasn't. Unless also, she gives the shoes to a random weird morgue worker guy. It's a bad series.
So, hey, let's do what all good podcasters should do and try and get some balance here. There must be some good bits about The Punisher.
Jigsaw, I just want to bring up one thing.
Let's stop calling him Jigsaw. Let's call him what he is, Cutface.
He's not Cutface either. He's not Cutface because the scar on his cheek.
Cut Price, that's what we're calling him.
Cut Price.
Cut Price, I can go with. It's just suddenly hit me. It looks like a Japanese letter of some sort.
Oh, the weird squiggle on his face.
Yeah. Remember Prince used to do the squiggle on his face?
Yeah.
It's like they've looked at Prince and gone, actually, we should do that for Jigsaw, but we'll make it something that looks kind of vaguely Japanese. So people will be puzzling whether it's an actual word or something like that. Does it
happen? Oh, man. You know what? I forgot that episode where Billy goes to the tattoo parlor, the dodgy Japanese place, and says, I want the symbol for vengeance. And they actually just print the Japanese character for drunk white idiots.
I mean, my main problem with Jigsaw's scars, though, is his forehead is perfectly fine. Like, if I hit shards of glass that much with my face...
I mean, it's not even like the forehead. It's kind of like the center of his face, basically.
Yeah. Where are all the scars on his nose, on his forehead, you know, on his chin, on his lips?
Where are the cuts on a man who's supposed to literally look like his face has been pieced back together like a jigsaw?
My brother, when he was a kid, got hit in the face by a cricket ball at the annual emergency services sports festival. And he still has a cross-shaped scar on his lip where the corky hit him in the face. And this is like 40 years later. All I'm saying is, if somebody had been hit in the face repeatedly by shards of glass, only maybe a few months before?
I mean, is it a few months? I think it's supposed to be like a year, isn't it?
Okay, a year before?
I don't know, plastic surgery, blah, blah. Not realistic to have him look like a jigsaw puzzle. I don't care.
If you're going to do plastic surgery, do it the Punisher way.
Not realistic.
No. If you're going to do plastic surgery, do it the proper Punisher way. No, don't. Don't do it the proper Punisher way.
I do not want season two, the role of Billy Russo, who played by Terry Crews. I lie. I do want that. I want that so bad.
I was about to say, that would be amazing.
Anyway, interest of balance. There's some good action.
Yes.
Like, one fight scene where he fights a bunch of Russians in a gym. That's pretty good. Smacking guys with dumbbells.
Yeah.
I mean, John Bernthal himself is still amazing.
I had no problem with John Bernthal. I had no problem with the Punisher character. It's just everything else.
Yeah, I think it's just he's not really given that. Like, John Bernthal in the first episode is amazing.
Yes.
Where he's getting ready to move on with his life and, like, settle down with this girl he's met, but then gets dragged back into the world of the Punisher. And, like, when he's going full on, just like a rabid dog fighting people, that's some good acting, John Bernthal. John Bernthal is still the perfect Punisher.
Yeah.
And then the other actors, they are also in the series. I mean,
they've added some credits to their CV.
They certainly have. I mean, I don't want to say any of them really do a bad job. It's just, like, they don't have anything. Like, their main role is just to stand around in the background and occasionally go, oh, no, Frank, you shouldn't do that. That's about how you've done it anyway.
Yeah. I've just shared...
To say that Billy Russo, he's a bad un. Speaking of, yeah, I've just seen Robbie Uber share some fan art of what Jigsaw could have looked like.
Yeah.
And I don't know if maybe we can include this in the episode image or something, because that's what I want.
That is Jigsaw. Yeah. That's exactly what Jigsaw should have looked like, isn't it?
Yeah. And, like, even if something like that is too expensive on the budget, because I don't really know how much it costs, just have his face, like, wrapped in bandages for most of the series.
Yes.
And then he takes it off right at the end. And, like, that's the big reveal of, oh my God, look at how bad his face is.
If that was coming at you in a fight, that is terrifying.
True.
Yeah, I say that. But also, do you want to know what the final fight with Cut Price is? So basically, Madani goes to the therapist's house and somehow forgets that, like, she's some trained, like, Homeland Security operative and ends up almost losing a fight to her. Like, even though literally her only move is just to flail about wildly. So she ends up throwing the therapist out a window by accident.
Ah, so they've gone to the Kate Bush School of Martial Arts.
Exactly. And then Billy, he sees that, he gets all angry, and he runs into the flat and is going to try and kill Madani, but she shoots him a bunch and he runs away.
Like you do after you've been shot.
Yeah, I was about to say, surely not.
So then he tries to get surgery, but then he ends up fainting on the kind of the operating table, so the surgeon just dumps him in the trash. Then he limps over to Curtis's place, collapses near a wall, and then Frank comes and shoots him. The end.
So,
nice. The way you describe that, Frank comes and shoots him, that makes it sound like he gets like a sort of handgun and just pops one in his head. That doesn't sound like a Frank killing to me.
Yeah.
I think Frank probably shoots him a lot.
Do you mean twice? Because shoots him twice in the while he's, already bleeding to death against the wall.
Well, you know, we're reaching that time of the year when some of this comic book stuff that I watch starts to dry up a little bit.
But it's okay, because I haven't told you about the final fight with other series antagonist John Pilgrim, like the weird creepy priest dude who's hunting Frank and his annoying teen surrogate daughter.
Oh, him.
Yeah. Basically, they have a bit of a punch-up, but then he's all, no, but I've got kids and the real bad guys are holding them hostage. So they go kill those guys instead and Frank just lets him go.
So, creepy pasta. His kids are being held hostage?
Yep. Also, he used to be in a white supremacist gang or something.
So that suddenly makes it okay?
But he's got kids, Rob.
Oh, God, I forgot this is America. You can speak as a mother and everything is fine. You're an authority on everything.
Yep.
Yeah, that's actually what happens is Frank's about to, you know, blow his head off with a shotgun and he goes, actually, speaking as a mother, you shouldn't do this. And Frank's like, he's got me. There's a shootout in a hotel room, which is literally just them, like, firing guns through walls at each other. It's a bit silly.
It sounds like a John Woo action scene, but like John Woo Hong Kong, not John Woo Hollywood.
Kind of John Woo by way of Benny Hill. Like, I was just watching the light diving in and out of hotel rooms, just in America.
See, I want that now. I want loads of John Woo action scenes to just have that theme tune on top of them.
You've broken him again, Andrew.
It's such a good idea.
Wait, so I think we're probably about near the end of the review. I think there's just one last thing that I want to say, which is I don't know how you guys felt, but that there was just something in the series that made a lot of the fight seem like quite fake to me.
Yes. Yes.
Like, it's very obvious that this is the actor John Bernthal holding a prop gun, which has got CGI effects on it to make it look like it is firing.
Yeah.
In the first season, they had like a certain element of believability about them, a certain intensity. But it just seemed like the action itself, even though it was stylish, it was still very phoned in. It was still kind of fake. It just seemed like whoever was directing all the combat, especially the hand-to-hand stuff as well, after that first episode, it just seemed like they'd changed whoever was in charge of it all, or they'd cut the budget or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think the end of season, episode 3 is the best example in my mind, where the Punisher, like, gets an assault rifle, so, like, balances his, on his other arm because he's broken it.
Yeah.
And just, like, runs through the woods, just going, like, pew, 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 pew.
Yes.
And that's just, it's just a bit silly, isn't it?
Yeah. I know a lot of it just lacked the intensity of the first season.
Yeah, there's no weight to it.
And I think part of it is because, as you said, 60% was just them sitting around doing nothing.
Anyway, that's me done. I've had my nice cathartic moan.
Well, I think I'll probably work my way through to the end.
No, I'll finish it. I will finish it. I don't know when, I don't know where, but it will be done.
But all I'll be doing is going, oh God, please start season 3 of Jessica Jones. Please start season 3 of Jessica Jones. Please start.
But Mick, there is no season 3 of Jessica Jones. And there never will be.
So what did they film in June?
Is there going to be one?
Yeah. It was confirmed in June of last year. It was confirmed in April of last year. And they started filming in June. It's due for release sometime midsummer.
Oh, okay. See, I saw a headline saying Jessica Jones and the Punisher not expected to return at Netflix. But scrolling down, I think they mean after Jessica Jones season 3.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Oh, there you go. Guess we've got one more Marvel series to go.
Yeah.
All right, I think we should probably take a break there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we will be back in a sec with some comics, what we have read.
And that.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's Four Panel, and that bit of the show that you've all been waiting for, where we give you our views on the comics and manga that we've been reading this week. Who's first?
That would be me. Right, first up to bat for me, I have two things to do with spiders. The first one is Venom. He's gonna get him. But this isn't that Venom, this is Venom the First Host. This one's a weird one. This one's by Mike Costa with pencils by Mark Bagley, Ron Lim, and Paco Diaz, and inks by Andrew Hennessy, Scott Hanna, and Paco Diaz. Colours by Donna Sanchez Almara, letters by VC's Clayton Cowles, and cover art by Mark Bagley and Richard Izanov.
I forgot about the Venom song. That was an actual rap done by actual rap superstar Eminem at the end of the Venom movie.
Yes, I just had to throw that in there. Anyway, it starts off on the planet Clint with some people in spacesuits who have discovered the symbiotes And then it goes on to the Skrulls, and the Skrulls are about to kill a bunch of Kree refugees. And then all of a sudden there's a Kree soldier who is in a symbiote suit, and he is leading these Kree to safety, these Kree refugees, and he gives them the symbiote, but they have to put the symbiote in an escape pod and jettison it, and it's going to crash land on some random world. Next thing you see is Eddie Brock as Venom taking out a couple of punks who were about to rob a convenience store, and he beats the crap out of them, enough for his fist to be covered in blood afterwards, which scares a woman and her baby.
Yeah, so, I imagine it probably would.
Here's the thing. Eddie is about to become a dad. Excited. Yeah, Eddie is excited about becoming a dad. And Venom is also excited because Eddie is about to become a dad. And the reason why Venom is also excited about Eddie becoming a dad is because Venom is going to become a mummy.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes, because Venom has basically split off part of itself as a parasite baby, as a symbiote baby. And the symbiote baby is growing and progressing in a lab at Oscorp, which is being monitored and maintained by Liz Osborn, Harry's wife.
Yeah. So it's like a carnage.
No, actually, it's just a baby. It's just a baby symbiote. It can't do anything, and Venom and Eddie have a telepathic link with it. Liz wants to do all sorts of things with it and produce new drugs and stuff like that and take Oscorp to the top of the world rankings, yada, yada, yada. But Eddie, being a new parent, he's very protective of his and Venom's offspring. He's very, very protective of it. And what he doesn't realize is that somebody else wants the symbiote. Somebody else wants to basically get even, get things corrected, or things as they see corrected. And it turns out that it is a Skrull, but not a Skrull as you know it, because this is one of the war brides that the Skrull have, some female Skrull warrior. And also, it's a blue-skinned guy who turns out to have the name Telkar, and he was the first host of Venom, and he's here to get his symbiote back.
Look, I still haven't really worked my way past symbiote, baby.
It's a lot to process.
It is a lot to process. See, that's the thing about this. It is a hell of a lot to process. There is so much going on.
But how did they make the baby?
I didn't go into detail.
When a daddy symbiote and a mummy symbiote.
Yeah, but what about if it's a mummy symbiote and a human? Or a daddy symbiote and a human?
There are special corners of the internet for that kind of thing.
This is some weird symbiote version of My Two Dads, isn't it? So anyway, Venom's first host is a Kree warrior who was an undercover agent during the Kree-Skrull War, and his name is Telkar. Telkar and this Skrull war bride are having a fight in an alleyway over the symbiote. Eddie helps the Kree soldier, Eddie helps Telkar, only for Telkar to turn out to be an absolute monster who wants vengeance on the Skrulls. And the reason he wants vengeance on the Skrulls is because when he eventually escaped from the Skrulls, the Kree Empire had been taken over by Zealots, and he was tried as a traitor because he didn't bring the symbiote back, and he was tortured and then handed over to the Skrulls, who tortured him for years afterwards. Now he hates everybody, so he wants to destroy everybody. And so,
you know, I kind of sympathise with him.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Initially, he doesn't want to take Eddie's symbiote. He doesn't want to take Venom. But then he holds the baby symbiote hostage, and so he gets the symbiote that way, because the last thing any parent wants to do is have somebody hurt their offspring.
So I really hope that sentence is going to, he held it in his arms above his head, like in The Lion King.
No, not quite. Not quite. Anyway, this carries on. The baby symbiote apparently has different powers to Venom, and also goes with Eddie to protect its parent, its other parent, because it calls Eddie father. And so that makes Venom mummy. I'm not even going to go into the Freudian psychology of all that. The art's nice. But the story is Fruit Loops. The story is absolute Fruit Loops.
This is illegal. It's a crime. It shouldn't have been done.
It's bizarre. I mean, it kind of harks back to, you know, when Venom was a space knight. It kind of harks back to that. And,
yeah, it's just that there was no mummy daddy stuff in that.
There's no mummy daddy stuff in that. The ending is very bittersweet, but not in the way that you think. And at the end of it, you kind of feel sorry for Eddie and Venom. But up until that point, it's tough. It's tough going. Prepare to scratch your head a lot.
I just don't get the logistics of it. I mean, if Eddie Brock and the symbiote want to start a family together, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm happy for them. But just how?
I mean, there is one great scene in this, and that's when Norman shows up, and Norman and Eddie go for a drink, and they're just kind of reminiscing about how they both used to hate Spider-Man, and how they've kind of moved on from that now.
Do you mean Harry?
Sorry, Harry. Yeah, Harry, not Norman.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. How they both used to hate Spider-Man, and how they've kind of moved on from then. For Harry, it was because he was grounded, because he's got Liz, he's got a family, and so, you know, that kind of drew him back from all this. Well, a lot of Harry's hatred of Spider-Man didn't really make sense in the first place.
Yeah, it was what? Displaced anger.
Yeah. Is it displaced or misplaced? I can't remember. Because they're both valid words.
Yeah, whatever words. Pick whatever you want.
Anyway, moving on. Like I said, prepare to be confused. Over to you, Andrew.
That's the sound it makes.
That's the sound of Andrew's confusion. Next on Desert Island Discs.
So squelchy. Anyway, I've been reading Space Boy Volume 2 by Stephen McCrane.
You kind of liked Volume 1 of this, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was surprisingly very into Volume 1. This is the story of Amy, a girl who grows up on a mining station in deep space, only for her father to lose his job there. And so they're forced to move back to Earth. Only the problem is that requires them to go into like a cryo sleep for 30 years. And so when Amy wakes up, not only is it in a completely new place, but like everyone she ever knew is now like dead or significantly older than she is. And so she's had to adjust to a completely new life. But also, and amongst all this teen drama, is a mysterious boy named Oliver, who doesn't talk to anyone, seemingly has no emotions, and keeps sneaking off into the woods to do mysterious mysteries.
See, this sounds a lot like Twilight.
I pride myself I only got 20 minutes into Twilight before realising it was hogwash and stopped.
It's basically, what if Twilight, but good and actually quite charming?
Ah, now that would be interesting.
And also there was a big cosmic mystery going on in the background with like a mysterious artifact in deep space and mysterious one-eyed aliens that invade your dreams.
Who told you about the dream invasions?
The Otter did.
Okay.
But there's a callback.
That is a masterful callback. Of course, none of our younger listeners will remember the Otter.
You're right, probably lost a whole generation of listeners since the Otter.
It's all right, we can resurrect the Otter as long as we can call him Octavius afterwards.
Oh, God!
Anyway, so yeah, this volume focuses more on Oliver, because I know Volume 1 was very much kind of Amy adjusting to a new life. This is more about her kind of investigating just who is this odd chap and what's he up to? And yeah, it's still very fun, very charming. Like, there's a bit where Emmy ends up getting a fever and has to stay off school. And so one of the kids called Zeph, who very obviously has a crush on her, kind of comes over with the bag and says, "Hey, I got you some chicken soup." And then she opens the bag. I said, "This is just like a can of chicken soup." And yeah, and some more good mystery stuff. Because Amy does begin talking to Oliver, mainly when she finds him. Piece of art he's done, basically displaying the stars, but how they are if you see them in space, because like in space they don't twinkle, because Earth's atmosphere and science and junk. Just there's a bit at the start where it does kind of feel a bit twilighty over-the-top melodrama, because basically all of his explanation is like he wasn't drawing the stars. He was drawing the nothingness in between the stars. Because what if all life is just nothing and it's all an illusion? Which, like, sounds really overwrought. But then as the story goes on, you realise, ooh, actually, maybe this is a hint that Oliver isn't what he seems. And I do mean what.
Is he a goth?
Not quite, no. That's not exactly what I mean.
Sorry, it's just a very goth thing, isn't it? The nothingness between the stars.
It is. But also I feel like it works. Because, like, I think at one point he says, he kind of feels like life's an illusion. Because everything, you know, can just, like, disappear in an instant. And that actually kind of works, because that has happened to Amy.
Yeah.
Like, she literally went to sleep one day and woke up, and nothing was the same. But it works, and it kind of, I think, works to establish quite a deep relationship between these two.
Cool.
Yeah, I still really enjoyed it.
I was about to say, it sounds like you're really enjoying this as well.
Yeah, I am. But I feel the art I'm still kind of in two minds about, because it is, it's good with the characters, like, it's very expressive, but it's just, because it's quite cartoony, it can maybe make the book appear less deep than it is, like it's just some very silly, light, cartoony thing.
Yeah.
When it's actually kind of dealing with some heavy emotional stuff. But still, it's good. Everyone should read it.
Awesome.
Cool.
It's also, Orphan drama needs more, like, weird sci-fi in it.
It's me next, isn't it?
Yep.
It is you next. Well done.
See, I was following the plot there.
Well, that means this show is much better than The Punisher.
Yeah, I haven't dozed off yet. So, I'm a bit confused by this. This was The Mighty Crusaders from Dark Circle Comics. And I think our earliest exposure to this, which is a sort of reboot of some older Dark Circle characters, I think the earliest reference we've got on 4-Panel was when the individual hero stories started coming out, like The Shield and The Hangman.
I think The Shield was the first one we ever did.
Yeah. And I covered that one, and I was really looking forward to the launch of the group one. I know I covered The Hangman. I think, Rob, did you cover The Fox?
Yeah, I did The Fox. I know that you liked The Shield and you liked The Hangman as well.
Yeah, I did. I never got round to reading The Fox, and there's one called The Black Hood that I don't know whether any of us covered.
I don't think we got that one.
I don't recall covering any of them.
Dark Circle is basically the sort of dark side of Archie Comics. And so I was looking forward to this sort of Dark Circle version of the Avengers.
Hang on. The dark side of Archie Comics, though, is stuff like Jughead the Hunger.
No. They're still on the Archie Comics imprint. This is traditionally Dark Circle Comics, which was the dark side of Archie Comics.
Oh,
so they
right,
had a publishing
you.
Imprint that
yeah,
was...
Yeah, I get you, though. I get you.
Yeah.
I get you.
So I was really looking forward to this amalgam because I was particularly intrigued to see how a character like the Hangman, which is basically like Ghost Rider,
yeah,
in that he's someone who signs a deal with the devil to come back and get the evil souls and in return for which are given the powers to do so. I was intrigued to see how that would fit in with a more sort of Captain America style hero like the Shield. I was only half satisfied because the Shield is here, but I don't recognise any of the other characters. And it's a reasonably okay story, but I spent too much time trying to figure out what everybody's powers were to really focus on the story. So from what I understand, you actually got the new Crusaders, which was the first team-up between all these characters. And then I believe that there was another new Crusaders called Dark Tomorrow, where things didn't go quite to plan. Oh, no, sorry, Dark Tomorrow is reprinted here in this story. New Crusaders was published, and then things didn't go well for the New Crusaders, and the Mighty Crusaders took over. So these are like the New Crusaders, the next generation. And it claims in the foreword that it's been written in such a way that you can just pick it up and it doesn't matter whether you've read the other stuff or not.
If their first team-up was the New Crusaders, doesn't that then suggest that originally there was a team called the Crusaders?
The Crusaders. You'd think, but no. I think they call it the New Crusaders to distance it from the original ones that these are a reboot of, perhaps.
But it's a reboot. Why care?
I don't know. I'm not a publisher.
And they've rebooted the Avengers so many times, and they still just call them the Avengers.
Or the Uncanny Avengers. Or the Ultimate Avengers. Or the all-new, all-different Avengers.
If it's only a baby symbiote, can it only cover, like, a little tiny bit of Venom? Like, it just turns into, like, Venom-style shorts.
So... So you get the briefest of brief introductions to these. The Shield, Victoria Adams, I knew anyway because I'd read The Shield. It starts off with them fighting a villain called Dino Rex, who's a sort of, if you imagine the Incredible Hulk, complete with purple pants, mixed with the Lizard, you get the picture.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got a guy called the Comet, who appears to be a flying version of Cyclops. There's Firefly, who appears to be a sort of cross between Human Torch and the Wasp. And there's another one called Darkling, who is possibly the most intriguing of all of the characters in this. But you don't really get to see anything about her, about where she gets her powers from. You get more coverage of Jaguar, who's a bit Black Panther-y. Are you spotting a theme here with some of these?
Yeah, Darkling is basically Raven, isn't it?
It's either Raven or it's... Because I think these guys are closer to Marvel heroes than they are to DC.
I mean, Shield is basically just Captain America, isn't he?
Yeah.
Shield is basically Captain America, but the Black Panther guy could also be... you remember that wrestler who basically dressed as a Black Panther in DC and worked with the Justice Society, Andrew.
Wait, who now?
There was a character in the Justice Society who was basically a wrestler who wore a Black Panther outfit. He was basically dressed as a giant black cat.
Wildcat.
Yeah,
the reason I compare it more to Black Panther is because there's a Panther spirit or a Jaguar spirit, a Jaguar god, talking to her inside her head.
Okay.
Which is a bit more in tune with the, you know, what happens to T'Challa when he takes the Wakanda weed.
Yeah, man.
There's a guy called Webb who doesn't have anything to do with spiders as far as I can tell, except, you know, that strange webbing wing that Spider-Man sometimes has.
Yeah,
he's got one of those, but he seems to have more of an electrical power, so it's more of a web of electricity. I'd have called him Grid if it was me, but there you go. And this is the problem, as you've probably gathered, they're all a bit derivative of other heroes now. The only difference really between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America, apart from the obvious that she's female, there's this element of, whereas Captain America, as I recall in the comics, he goes through periods of being frozen and re-thawed as a super soldier. She gets reincarnated. She dies over and over again, and she remembers all her deaths. But she always comes back as this sort of defender of the nation. And she's got predecessors.
Like, Uncle Sam.
Yeah, and she's got predecessors as well. So there's a guy in here who's called Broken Shield, because he's the old man who used to be the Shield, but then got beaten and now isn't the Shield.
And so now that you can just call yourself something that isn't the Shield.
Yeah, it's like Superman permanently losing his powers and just calling himself Man.
No, it'd be Man Man.
That would be Ordinary Man.
Or Human Man.
Not so Superman. And the artwork is kind of a bit, it's a bit more close to the Archie comics than the S.H.I.E.L.D. comic and the Hangman comic were.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that the artwork, I seem to remember the artwork was a lot more naturalistic in both of those than this. This is more what I would call your traditional comic book artwork. But it's such a derivative team up. It's such a fairly derivative story, to be fair. I wanted to enjoy it so much more than I did. It's very much like Punisher Season 2 in that way. There is a support strip which has got far superior artwork on it, and this is the, I believe this is the Dark Tomorrow story that's mentioned. And it's got the added bonus that apart from a very derivative villain called Ragnarok, who kills gods,
does he eat them as well?
It's not made clear because he doesn't actually meet any gods, only heroes. So,
do you like that guy who reckons you could take Bruce Lee in a fight if it ever happened?
Oh, you mean the one down the pub after a few pints?
Yeah.
But there's a lovely, interesting character that they've introduced who's a bit like a sort of, well, it's an alien monkey, basically, that's got the intelligence to go and do the laundry and fly their fighter jet and stuff. And it's sort of like the Yoda of the group. And there's some lovely interactions about it. You know, like, you don't want to go to Roswell. That's where all the aliens crash. Oh, is that where you landed? No, that was someone else. Long story. Those kind of interactions.
Is this like the Sage version of Mojo Jojo?
I didn't understand any of those words that came from your face mouth.
Andrew understood. I know you understood, Andrew.
The only thing that Nick has ever seen an episode of the Powerpuff Girls was maybe not your smartest move.
Yeah, this is true.
You see, I'm aware that that exists, but that's as far as it goes. I'm aware that that was a thing at some point in time.
Yeah, they're a team of like preteen girl superheroes whose enemies include Mojo Jojo, a monkey with a big hat, and literally Satan.
I see where you've got the confusion. This monkey doesn't have a big hat.
Okay.
I apologise for omitting that fact, but I didn't realise it was salient. And also, they've got probably the cheesiest named villain that they go up against ever. It's so cheesy, I'm having to look it up because I can't believe it's as cheesy as it is.
Please say it's something like Villain E or Villain Villain.
The Gorgon Zola.
That would at least suggest some kind of playing on words.
Is it Chidar?
No. It's there's one guy who looks a bit like Galactus. He's called Eternos. He's not great.
They're not subtle, are they?
No. He's called something like the Master Brain or something like that. It's that cheesy.
See, again, with the names, if there's a Master Brain, is there a Servant Brain? Is there?
We don't know. But, yeah.
Is that what he calls his henchmen? Servant Brains?
And it, you know, it could be great. It's just one of those comics that could have been so good, but it's so derivative that it falls far short of being good.
Or maybe Master Brain doesn't have like a gender identity. Maybe he just defines themselves as the brain. So he wouldn't have henchmen or henchwomen. They would be hench brains.
I want to find out. Oh, that's him. That's it. I've got it. The Brain Emperor.
He could still have hench brains then.
And you can tell he's the Brain Emperor because his head is slightly veiny. you know like them clever aliens on Star Trek.
Or just someone who's really angry.
Yeah. He's either incredibly intelligent or a little bit tetchy.
Yeah.
The what most is just overcompensating because Mother Brain didn't love him enough as a child.
You've You've also got one of those things, and again, I don't know whether this has got anything to do with the previous team-up comics or not, but there's a sort of an aside where we get a, you know, a standard comic panel descriptive box saying, meanwhile, ... near Kameni, a GNC, and we cut to a sort of simplified Indiana Jones opening where some guy is getting escorted through the desert to a place, and then the final panel on the page is a reveal of, well, basically, if someone instructed a comic book artist to draw an evil archaeologist, this is the guy they'd draw, right? But it's done in a way, you know, like a reveal, like, this is the guy that we've only been showing from the back up to now, or very obscured shots of, but when we put him full front on, just his face in close-up in a panel, you'll automatically recognize him as the villain.
Yeah, like the mysterious figure pulls down his hood and it's Doctor Doom or something.
Yeah, it's like that, but if you imagine that he pulls down his hood, it's Doctor Doom, but prior to this point in time, Doctor Doom has never existed. Because this is just some guy in a hat. But he does look evil.
At some point in the Mighty Crusaders comics that I guess must exist, probably.
Sorry.
Maybe.
It's just the way you describe him makes him sound like, you know, some guy in a hat. Just makes him sound like Indiana Doom. The Temple of Doom.
to be fair, it would have been more interesting if he'd have had a metal face. But at this, he's like every villain that appeared in a Sinbad movie.
Oh, is this like how every TV show seems to want to portray the devil as just some guy in a suit?
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
Titans.
And then there's a pale imitation of Juggernaut.
So is this any good or not, then?
It's okay. I mean, if you didn't want to run the risk of getting involved in all that Marvel crossover nonsense that goes on, and you didn't want to spend vast amounts of money sinking your cash into storylines that you didn't really sign up for, you just thought it was going to be like an 8-issue wonder and that was it. Not that I'm bitter. It's all right. It's kind of like my first superhero team-up comic.
Yeah.
Only it shouldn't be. It should be at least your second one so that you get all the backstory about why they're the new... These are the Mighty Crusaders. The new Crusaders came before the Mighty Crusaders. But there's not enough backstory to really identify with the characters. There's a fella called Wyatt who comes back. You know not from where. This feels more like Archie comics than the previous two that I did.
Okay.
Except for the backup strip, which has got far superior artwork in. That feels more like something you get from a Marvel or DC title.
Cool.
Especially with the Angry Space Monkey.
Anyway, Rob, you've got more Spider nonsense, right?
Yes. Edge of Spider-Geddon, which collects Edge of Spider-Geddon 1-4 and Superior Octopus number 1. I wonder what that could be about. Anyway, this is collectively written by Jed McKay, Lonnie Nadler, Zach Thompson, Gerard Way, Jason Latour, and Aaron Kuda, and Christos Gage. It's illustrated by Gerardo Sandoval, Alberto Albuquerque, Tonchi Zonjic, Aaron Kuda, Will Robson, Mike Hawthorne, and Mark Bagley. Please don't ask me to go through letters and people like that, because I really don't want to. So anyway, this is Edge of Spider-Geddon, and the Spider-Geddon issues in this are mucho confusing. The first one is about Hobart Hobie Brown, who...
Heck yeah, this is the one I've read.
Yeah, who defeated Norman Osborn, the oppressive US president of Earth-138, before he was handpicked by Superior Spider-Man to join his Spider Army opposing the Inheritors. And this is after the Inheritors and everything like that. You also have young Peter Parker and his Uncle Ben, who both have spider powers. Ben Parker is a bit like She-Hulk in that he got his spider powers from a blood transfusion from Peter. You have Penny Parker, who is piloting the spider robot after her father's mysterious death. You have another one where Oscorp is one of the most powerful corporations in the world, and Spider-Man defends Oscorp, but there are rumours of a goblin. And you also have the Superior Octopus, which is basically Otto Octavius as a clone, now as the Superior Octopus instead of Spider-Man, because he has stopped being Superior Spider-Man.
You see, I was expecting Superior Octopus to be Otto Octavius inhabited by the mind of Peter Parker.
No, it's Otto Octavius inhabited by the mind of Otto Octavius, but it's a young Otto Octavius now because he's a clone. Anyway, this starts off with a story about Spider-Punk, Spider-Man, who is Hobie Brown. And Hobie Brown is laying the smackdown on everyone's favourite alternate take on Thor, who in this universe works for the Red Skull. You know who I'm talking about, don't you, Andrew?
Fucking Thunderstrike.
Yes. Who basically in this is a big fat biker guy with a mace. But then Kang turns up, but he isn't Kang the Conqueror in this. He is Kang the Conglomerator, and he is here for Spider-Punk, because Spider-Punk apparently dies an early death, and if they live fast, die young, you know, leave a good-looking corpse. He is now a massive hit in Kang's time, and so Kang's come to get the original Spider-Punk, because he can make a fortune. But Spider-Punk doesn't want that, and so he goes to Captain...
Yeah, he doesn't want the man owning his music.
Exactly, so he goes to Captain Anarchy to get the cassette of Captain Anarchy, because he needs an atomic bomb to take out Kang. And he manages to get the cassette from Captain Anarchy to his friend, Robbie, who basically trashes Kang once he listens to the tape.
Yeah, because who is Robbie?
He is Robert the Bruce. No, he isn't. He is Robert Bruce Banner.
That was a fun twist. I liked that.
Yeah, I loved that. Because when he taps on Robbie's shoulder at the beginning, I'm just like, who is this Robbie fella? And then he turns into like the Hulk version of the Savage Dragon. He's basically Punk Hulk. Which, I don't know how you... Is he Polk? Is he Hunk? He is Hunk, isn't he?
That's Hunk. That's what we call him.
Because he's got like the ripped metal jeans with a massive chain around it, and he's got the mohawk, and he's covered in like tattoos.
Although then again, I guess it would make sense that Polk would stand up for the common people.
Yeah, but then Spider Woman, as in female Peter Parker, whatever she's called, turns up and summons Spider-Punk, and he has to disappear to go and fight something. Penny Parker, on the other hand, is having problems because Addie Brock, wants to make friends with Penny. They could have been good friends, but Penny is having difficulties because they've built another spider robot, but they called it Venom. Only Ben has done something, and that results in losing Addie and May Parker. Which I have a problem with, because even though Penny knows that... Ben is in charge of the spider project and sorted this stuff out. May basically says, you know, what the hell have you done, Ben? Penny seems to be okay with the loss of two people thanks to Ben's mess up with the robot. I have no idea why the writing in that one is so bad, but, you know.
It's because Jared Way saw an episode of Neon Genesis Evangelion once.
I mean, after losing her Aunt May, and after losing Addie, and after having the crap kicked out of her robot by another robot that went crazy, Penny is happy to sit down and talk to her Uncle Ben, who she knows is the cause of it all. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't do that.
But anyway, you've got a lot of stories to get through.
Yeah, but Spider-Ham comes and gets her and takes her away. Next is the young Peter Parker and Uncle Ben, sorry, which I have to admit, I kind of like. I have a soft spot for this because Ben Parker reacts to the possible death of Peter Parker in a very human way, and I've got to say, I like this version of Ben Parker. But then you've got the penultimate story, which is Harry sneaking into Oscorp to get the Goblin outfit and fight his dad to destroy a twisted cosmic cube. All fun. Because his dad killed Peter, his best friend. And that ends with Norman... or Spider Norman, as we'll call him. He's basically in the web of life. He's in that space between worlds, which is where he always wanted to be. And he's there until Spider-Punk comes and pulls him out of it. He's like, no! What have you done? And then you go to the Superior Octopus, which is basically Otto trying to reestablish himself and also handing Armin Zola a new body. As in, he tears apart Armin Zola's old body when he turns up, because this is set after he started working for Hydra and then stopped working for Hydra.
Hooray! Dr. Octopus learned that maybe being a Nazi is bad.
Yeah, Dr. Octopus also employs supervillains to work for him, trying to do good things in San Francisco. This is a bizarre thing, and I am quite curious about Spider-Geddon and what the logistics of Spider-Geddon are, because they're touting it as the biggest Spider-Man crossover event, but there, at the end of things, you have Khan and Captain Britain, who don't have a world to go back to because of the Inheritors, but then they realise they done goofed, because they sent a bunch of Spider-Bots that went to check on Khan's family, and they could broadcast signals across dimensions. And that can activate the cloning technology of the Inheritors. And since somebody has a cloning technology of the Inheritors, I wonder who it could be. Who could possibly clone themselves and technically become immortal and call themselves superior in every way?
Is it the guy who maybe used to work for the Nazis and now has a whole bunch of supervillains working for him?
Yep. He doesn't know that he's done goofed either.
But he's Otto Octavius. He's the smartest man. He's the only man smart enough to think of, but what if I had more arms?
Yep. Anyway, Andrew.
Yeah, so did you like Spider-Geddon, Rob?
It was confusing as balls.
Fair enough. Anyway, I've been reading Star Wars, Dr. Aphra, The Catastrophe Con, which is written by Cy Spurrier with art by Kev Walker, inks by Mark Deering, and colours by Java Tartaglia. And this once again picks up the adventures of everyone, by which I mean mostly my favourite rogue archaeologist and scoundrel, Dr. Chelly Aphra, who, after the events of the last book, has found herself stuck on a prison planet. And by a prison planet, I mean a bunch of old spaceships tied together and dragged through space and used by the Imperials, basically just as a battering ram against enemy spaceships.
Are they basically the Star Wars universe equivalent of the Suicide Squad?
Yeah, basically. But it's even more like they'll take the ship, ram it into the enemy, and just yell, advance towards the enemy, and anyone who falls behind will get exploded.
Okay.
So yeah, basically Suicide Squad. So she's stuck there. She makes friends with an alien shapeshifter who I think is called Lopset, but I tend to forget his real name because she just calls him Flopso. And there's actually... I should do a really neat thing where they kind of let on that he's a shapeshifter before the reveal. Because if you go back and look, you can actually see his eyes change colour sort of across different panels.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it's also not the kind of thing you really notice until like you go back and look for it again. So anyway, Aphra, she is stuck on this prison planet and she's got to work out a way to escape. And not just escape, but also make a tidy profit. Because that is the Dr. Aphra way. And it's just... once again, I really love how much these books are written for the trade. So I know that could be a problem with some series. But I really like how this very clearly has like a three-act structure. So kind of issues one and two will introduce all the various characters. Like you've got Dr. Aphra, shapeshifter friend, her sort of maybe girlfriend, Inspector Tolvan, her definitely ex-girlfriend, Sana Staros, and like a weird bounty hunter dude. And then issues 3 and 4 will sort of move them about, introduce all these things. Also, by the way, the prison planet might be haunted, because why not? And then in issues 5 and 6 of everything will come together. Like all these seemingly weird and random events will actually all tie together into like a big satisfying finale.
Cool. Do you
like that, guys, when seemingly separate storylines turn out to actually be related and then get tied together for a satisfying finale? I like that.
I do.
I would love that for Spider-Geddon. But Edge of Spider-Geddon is just like, it's the Spider-Geddon companion. You don't need to have read Spider-Geddon, but it's advisable.
Hold on. That's similar to Crusaders. That needed you to have done pre-read.
And to think I was just talking about The Punisher Season 2.
Yeah.
It's all connected, ironically enough.
See, we forgot about Punisher Season 2.
We tried. But no, Andrew had to mention it again.
Just remember.
If you want to mention Dr. A for some more, because it's really good.
Go on then.
So, like, this might be some of the best Kev Walker art I've seen. It's just, in general, I really like his stuff. But in this, he's so good at, like, expressions and storytelling. Like, there's a great bit where it kind of cuts to a 000, Dr. Afer's former homicidal protocol droid. And it's just like, it closes in on his eye. And like, just him repeating Afer's name over and over. And sort of like, slowly pans out. And then like, you turn the page to a full page of just him standing amongst like, hundreds of bodies in some kind of hall that is on fire. And that's just a great bit of like, I mean, it's basically a great bit of cinematography.
Yeah.
Also, I think, again, it does a really good job of like making Afer likable enough that you kind of root for her, but also having her called out on the fact that she's not a good person. Like, she will very happily screw over other people for her own gain, and does frequently. And sometimes it blows up in her face. Sometimes, maybe literally.
Does it blow up in her face in this?
It does blow, unsurprisingly, in a series in which lots of people have bombs implanted in their necks. Blows up in her face a bit. Anyway, Dr. Afer, still real good. Everyone go read it.
I've read the first three on your recommendation. I've really enjoyed them.
Yeah, I would say definitely read this one as well then.
Cool.
I might read it whilst avoiding the rest of the Punisher Season 2.
Oh my God. It's so bad Mick will turn to Star Wars to get away from it.
I know.
Now, what you want to do, Mick, right, you want to read the Star Wars while the Punisher's playing, but you're actually reading. So technically you have watched it then, and you can say, yeah, I've watched it all, even though your eyes have never looked at it once.
First of all, what you've got to remember is that I need something to anaesthetize me before I even enter the Star Wars universe.
Whiskey is good. To start with. Whiskey is good. Whiskey, tequila.
I'm not going to spoil good whiskey by merging it with the Star Wars universe.
Tequila, then.
I'm just a TV show that you actually like and watching that instead.
Yeah, that would be better. Are we done?
Yeah, we're basically done.
Yeah, we're done.
All right, okay. So if you want to catch up with any of our previous episodes, you'll find them all on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or whichever podcast provider that you're using. And if you're listening through anything like that, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure. It does help us improve. You'll find all the other stuff that we do on the Geek Show Podcast Network on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. That's reviews, other shows from other podcasts that we do as well. You'll find our Patreon and our shop also. And that's it from us. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We will see you all later.
Thanks for listening. And hey, why not tell us what you thought of the Punisher Season 2 in the comments.
Bye now.